What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode. Right now, if you want to keep up with us in our hunts, you can go over to our YouTube channel and follow along at The Hunting Public. We've been hunting in Iowa for the last couple of weeks. Had some pretty amazing encounters. Jake even got a nice buck killed on video not that long ago. We're going to be there until the end of this week. Then next week, we're going to be in Missouri hunting public land. Jake and Logan are actually up in Wisconsin this week also, so hoping to have some videos from there coming to you real soon. But on today's episode, myself, Jake, Ted, Greg, and our buddy Scott Peruca sit down and talk about what's been going on in October on the properties that we hunt. We're also going to recap Scott's moose hunt and a number of other comical topics. I think you guys will enjoy it. But before we get to that, I want to share some great discount codes and promotions that we've got going on right now. You can go to Legendary Whitetails, get 10% off there with our promo code. It is THP18. I'll also post links to all these in the description below. That's where we're selling our brand new THP shirts, and we'll have some hats coming real soon. Also, if you want to save 20% off of the Onyx Hunt app, you can use our promo code there at onyxmaps.com. It is THP in all caps. We can also save you 10% off of the grunt calls and the rattle bags that we use from Woodhaven. Go to woodhavencustomcalls.com, use the promo code THP2018, save 10% there. And if you want to look into purchasing some of our bow accessories that we use, you can go to trophyridge.com, use the promo code THP10, and it'll save you 10 bucks off of your order. We also just gave away a brand new set of Vortex Diamondback optics and an Impact rangefinder. Big thanks to Vortex for sending those optics out and allowing us to give them away. We had a great turnout on the giveaway. And if you're interested in anything Vortex sells, go to vortexoptics.com. Hope you enjoy the show. What's up, guys? We're live, and we're going to be bringing you some October updates today. Scott's got back from his moose hunt a little bit ago. Had some success up there.
Yes, we did.
In Alaska. We're going to touch on that. We're going to touch on Ted's bachelor party that he's going to tonight, maybe briefly. Just kind of inquire a little bit about it. Everything will be PG, no worries.
Yeah, nobody's happy with Ted right now.
Nope. That's why he's sitting over here.
I'll be over here.
I don't know who Ted's friend is, but we were discussing it last night, and it shouldn't be legal to have bachelor parties
and weddings in October, November.
October 27th. It's rough.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about Jake's buck that he just harvested a few days ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. Hopefully hopefully the ball's rolling now and we can just keep knocking them down.
I hope so. We needed some luck. Before we get into the conversation, guys, want to encourage everybody to go over to huntonus.com and just submit a picture of your deer hunting license, and you'll get $25 from Legendary Whitetails.
It just so happens that these THP shirts are right around $25. So yep. When you get that gift card, you can just get yourself a cool THP shirt, or you can get whatever you want from Legendary.
Or you can get some of these flannels, or you can get the headlamps that we use. And they have all kinds of stuff. And this is, like, so easy, guys. Just go to huntonus.com, take a photo with one of these of your deer hunting license, and just send it to them, and they're going to give you $25.
It's a free $25. Greg, turn that off.
Sorry. Yeah, it's a free $25. So, yeah, check it out.
Free is good.
Yeah, free is definitely good, especially for us.
For everybody.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like free?
Truth. So, let's get into your hunt a little bit, Jacob.
Yeah. Well, it all started 2 summers ago when I moved here.
Yeah.
And it's just that field. I was an intern then, and we always go out there just because it's an easy place to go and see and film deer and practice for the interns that are trying to learn how to film. And I don't know, that was one of the first spots that I scouted with you guys. And we always just drive by it and see bucks. Mm-hmm. And last year, I think Sean and I hunted it one time after we scouted it during the summer. And that was early October as well, but the sign wasn't there like it looked like it was when we scouted it during the summer. It just looked like there was a lot of buck sign in there, and we didn't hardly find anything. And that might have been part of the reason we never ended up going back there last fall. But then this summer, I felt like we didn't give it a fair shake last fall, and we put up some cameras and stuff just in case we weren't going to get to it again this fall. At least we'd have cameras in there and hopefully realize, like, man, we should spend some time in this area, or we shouldn't. We'll just learn from that. And then I ended up putting a camera out closer to the road, too, just because I had got permission from the
to walk in.
Yeah.
And this, to put it in perspective, is a very hard area of this public piece to access. Like, you, we walked in there and scouted a few summers ago, and you got to go up and over a few steep ridges through, you know, a bunch of thick timber. And it's very few people are going there.
And
so by getting the access through the private.
You have to walk through all the bedding just to get
right
to where we ended up sitting. And, like, we for sure would have spooked several deer. I mean, we ended up spooking deer off the field, but that's
right
different than spooking them from their bedding area, in my opinion. But
I thought it was interesting, though. It's, they're heading to an alfalfa field, and they were on it all summer, and they were on it through the early season, and they're still on it right now. And, like,
what else is there? Beans, corn around, or no?
It's pretty much just alfalfa, and unless they go across the road, then there's a variety of stuff, which they are going across the road, I think. I mean, that camera that I had, they're all going out towards the road. So I think late into the night, and, like, I think there's deer that bed across the road as well that come, and they just kind of flip-flop back and forth, it seems like, because I had pictures of nice bucks coming from across the road late at night, but they would also be on the camera early in the afternoon some days, like they were bedding back in the public there.
Do you have it on a gate, or where were they coming across? Just a tree line?
Yeah, it's kind of there's a fence that pinches it down, like on a tractor path, and then there's a fence line on the other side. And Aaron and I went in there the one day to check the camera that I had kind of on the field edge, and there's just scrapes all over closer to the road. I'm like, well, we'll just put a camera up here, and, I mean, we can check it whenever we want. I know that the property owners are messing around, like, in the fields all the time, so the deer aren't going to be worried about people walking around in an open field. And we could put a camera within 100 yards of the road and kind of get an idea of what was coming out, like, to those scrapes, and just kind of, we knew where the deer were bedded back in the public if they were back in there. And then
it's essentially what we always do on public, or one of the tactics that we use fairly often. You know, we're monitoring on the edge of the bedding out closer towards the food sources, and then we are seeing the direction in which the bucks are coming from. And then when you went in there and killed him, you went in and were hunting the exits leading out of the bedding.
Basically, we're trying to get an idea of if there's a buck in there that we want to shoot. And because we previously had it scouted, we knew, like, if there was something in there, where they would probably be coming out from. And the plan going forward from where I hunted that first time, if we didn't have any luck, we would have just pushed in further, closer to where the deer were bedded. But, I mean, just kind of learning from mistakes that I've made at least earlier this fall, just pushing a little bit too far. I mean, a couple of days before that, did the same kind of thing. Went 100 yards from a field edge and had a buck blowing at me, or what I thought was a buck blowing at me. So I was just like, all right, well, we'll just take it easy tonight. There's rubs all along here, right along the edge of the woods. And I knew that they were showing up after dark on that camera, but, like, where they could potentially be coming out to the field that was back further during daylight. And sure enough, he was out there 5:40.
One of the things I'm seeing in, like, this hunt of his, and I don't know if you see the same thing, Scott, but it's, everybody's always want to know, like, what are the deer on right now? They ask that general question, like, are the deer on acorns right now? Are they on cut corn? Are they on alfalfa? And, like, there's other alfalfa fields around these public areas that we hunt just down the road that aren't getting that much attention, you know? And I think every single situation, it's such a situational thing. Like, every single situation, every single area may have something slightly different that's going on. In this case, those deer have some acorns in the woods, but they're blitzing right through there and going straight to that field.
They were in beans this morning.
Were they?
Yeah. I had
brown beans.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, every bean field I saw when I left the house this morning, just after daybreak, they were. I wasn't hunting. I had to drive out of town, but yeah, they were. I mean, there were deer piled in them.
I think they just, this time of year, they have so much that they can eat.
Right.
You know, they just bounce from one thing to the next all the time, and if you're not, you know, adjusting,
they're funny with those green fields too, alfalfa, clover, and stuff. It seems like they won't bother it for a while, and even though you said they've been in it a lot, but it seems like there's times where it's like there's a week where they just, for whatever reason, even when there's other food around, they're just piling in there, and it's like, I don't know what triggers it. But.
And this was on, like, the tail end of a cold front, but, I mean, basically what the cameras were telling us, and when we drove by the night before I went in there and hunted, like, there was more deer out there than we had seen since basically we were there in Velvet this summer. I mean, I don't know if that cold front had something to do with them being on green, but
we've got a lot of questions on the hunt. I mean, If you guys want to check it out, it's over on the YouTube channel right now. We just posted it yesterday, correct?
Yes, last night.
Yeah, yesterday. So, but we have already got a lot of questions about the recovery and the shot,
yep,
and everything there, because it's, you know, not something that you want to experience.
No.
But it's kind of the nature of what whitetail hunting can be with a bow sometimes. Mm-hmm. And we should probably walk through some of that, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about the hit first, I think.
Yeah, if you watch the video, you can see that from my reaction, I thought that the deer was more broadside than what he was. He ended up being quartered to a lot harder than what I thought. And I hit the deer right where I was aiming, kind of like Ted did with his hunt, and both of us just didn't realize that the deer were quartered to a little bit. And the shot, I mean, it ended up clipping the back of the lung, liver, diaphragm, liver, and then out through the stomach. And eventually we just realized that, like, the track job wasn't going to be what we were hoping for, and we ended up coming up on him while he was still alive. And
this is how many hours after?
Seven.
Seven hours later.
We had the plan going in was the wind was going to be blowing away from where he had ran back in there, and it was so damp that we could be quiet. Like, we weren't worried about jumping him, even if he was alive, just because we knew we could be quiet enough. And we ended up walking up on him, and he didn't have a clue that we were there. So we just kind of backed off, and we should probably cover. Legally, we cannot shoot a deer after dark. I mean, it's just the rules. That's the law. We can't do it. And with what we're doing, I mean, we got a lot of comments about, oh, you should have shot him again. And trust me, like, we all felt like that was ethically the right thing to do. Like, but with what we're doing, we can't, like, have stories getting twisted.
Yeah, I mean, it's all on
video.
Yeah.
That's the right thing to do. You did the right thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you did the legal thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes our hands are tied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've probably all been in that situation, mm-hmm, and it's hard to watch the deer expire, but what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, the way that the law is written, they have to cover a fairly wide base, obviously statewide, in a lot of different scenarios. So, I mean, there's some gray area there, mm-hmm, but it's hard to know exactly, you know, what you can and can't do. I mean, you can call the game warden, and you guys tried doing that.
Yeah, we did. And it was just so late at night that he didn't answer.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I think that's what you're supposed to do in our state anyway, is call the game warden, and then they can either come out and help you dispatch it or, mm-hmm, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that was it's just kind of one of those bittersweet deals that you have. But you constantly hear about folks talking about a liver shot takes 3 hours, or gut shot wait 8 hours, eight, mm-hmm, to 10. And it's I don't know. What have you seen with
it's always different. Like, I mean, you don't know. I mean, sometimes you make that bad shot back and they go nowhere.
Right.
You come back 3-4 hours later, not knowing exactly where the hit was. And you find the deer went 50 yards and bedded and died.
I mean, Zach shot that buck in Nebraska through both lungs this year, and that thing lived for not terribly long, but you wouldn't expect him to live as long as he did. It's just,
it goes both ways, right? You make the perfect shot and they don't die right away, and sometimes you make the bad shot, they don't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's right.
There's no set hours on any of them. Like, we talked about it with Ted. It's like every one of these, unless you see him fall, is just, you don't know what to expect.
Right.
Really. I mean, you can kind of relate it back to similar shots you've seen or made, but it's always a little bit different, it seems.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's guidelines. I mean, we all kind of use the guidelines, right? If we know what's back, we're going to wait. We probably are going to wait 8 hours, you know, but that doesn't mean that's going to work in that situation. But it does put the odds in your favor, likely.
Using caution when you're tracking, too, is like, I mean, we were taking so much time where we knew we were either going to come up, like, we weren't going to spook him, I guess is what I'm trying to say, just because of the way the conditions were. Like, it was so wet, we weren't making hardly any noise, and the wind was in our favor, so... I mean, we weren't worried, or at least I wasn't worried about jumping the deer and pushing them where we couldn't find them.
That's another thing, too. A lot of folks see us tracking that night, and we like to do that just because, you know, if you wait, you risk the coyotes getting on him. And I mean, or if he's dead immediately, you risk, in warmer temperatures, you risk the meat potentially going bad, like with your buck in Kentucky, Ted.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice at night, especially in these types of conditions that you're talking about where it's wet or you got a little wind or whatever, you can walk right up on deer. Mm-hmm. You know, especially if it's a wounded deer that doesn't have his wits about him, so to speak. You can walk right up on those things. And you can, like in this instance, yes, it was a sad deal because the deer was still alive when you got up there. However, the silver lining was that you were there immediately when he expired. So mm-hmm. you could gut him and get him out of the woods, get him taken care of, mm-hmm. no risk or worry about coyotes getting in the meat or meat going bad.
Yeah.
And that's why we track them a lot of times at night. But you will see us proceeding with the utmost caution.
Mm-hmm. See, I think that's the biggest thing. Even though it was wet and you were quiet, even if it's not wet and you're as quiet as you can, paying attention to what's happening in front of you. Because if you go in with the gang and everybody's talking, right. and like you think he's mm-hmm. dead right there, mm-hmm. and that you can easily bump that deer mm-hmm. and not know he's gone ahead of you. But mm-hmm. if you're careful and you hear it happen, you can learn a lot again, right? Just like after the shot, you learn what happens with that, where that deer runs, how long you heard him crashing, and all that other stuff. I think you're gathering data.
You're right.
If you're quiet and careful.
And if you don't see them go down, like, don't take anything for granted.
Right.
You get those arrows and broadheads, they do funky stuff all the time. I mean, they can glance off a rib. It could look perfect right behind the shoulder and glance off a rib or something. You only end up hitting one lung. If you don't see them fall over and visibly see them die, you got to go in there cautious.
Well, we did that last year with that 8-point I shot mm-hmm. off the lane stand in there. I mean,
yep.
We just creeped to the – I mean, we weren't
and
sure.
Like you,
we didn't
you
even think
no
we had
idea.
A good hit,
right.
right? I mean, we're watching that video back at the house, and it's like it looks low. And my buddy Greg, who's like – I always rely on him for, like, where the shot is, how far the deer
yeah.
– he just kept shaking his head, nope, this isn't good. And I'm like, my stomach's sinking. But, I mean, I caught the heart, and he didn't go 40 yards.
Yeah,
and,
right.
But we did the same thing. We were careful, quiet, listening, even though we didn't see him come out of that little valley. But
it's funny. That's the same thing I was telling Logan. It's like – yeah, once we got back to the house and put it on the screen, I'm like, I don't know anymore, and I just started to get nauseous. I'm like, we'll see what Greg says.
Right. Yeah. And the blood can fool you, too.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these hits, you get tons of blood.
What did Greg say?
He pretty much called it. I mean, he said that my brother hit one pretty much in the same situation, and, I mean, it ended up being a bit of a rodeo, you know? Like
right.
And I think once we all got back, we definitely all realized that there was potential that we were getting into – something, and that's why we went in so quiet and with such caution.
It's, you know, dragging cameras along and filming this stuff is fun and it's cool to have it, but I'm telling you what an advantage we have sometimes because of that, right?
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. I mean
that's why and people were fussing about me not shooting that buck off the ground last week or whatever, like when it wasn't on video, but that's why we're so particular about filming it and trying to get the shot on film. It's because we learn so much after the fact from being able to go back and watch these hits, you know, and this is the second hit of that nature this year. Like with Ted's buck in Kentucky, it was very similar. And you're talking about an inch here where from killing the deer in maybe a short period of time and waiting 7 hours for him to die. And another thing that was different from those two deer in very similar hits was he was shooting fixed. Right?
Yep.
And you had a rage.
2-inch rage, and he was shooting a muzzy.
Muzzy, yep.
And I think in that situation, and I've always had a tendency to hit back instead of forward if I don't hit where I'm – I mean, I did hit where I was aiming, but I've never hit a deer in the shoulder, and that's why I shoot expandables, and I know Greg shoots expandables just because if you are back, you got
mm-hmm. –
I mean, the deer didn't close up till – I mean, in Ted's situation, we didn't have blood for 100 yards and almost left the woods.
Right.
Here we had blood immediately just because we had such a big opening in him.
Right.
And I guess that if you're looking for how to decide which broadhead you shoot, if you have a tendency to do one or the other, and I know I definitely have friends that have a tendency to shoot forward and they shoot a fixed blade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it makes more sense for them. So.
Yeah, I mean, with my bow setup, I'm always hugging that shoulder
mm-hmm.
really tight,
mm-hmm.
and I've killed a few right there in the base of the shoulder driving in there,
mm-hmm.
but that's a good point, very good point. Luckily, we were able to get both of the deer by staying persistent and after
yep.
them, but
mm-hmm.
anyway, Ted, What do you got going on today? You're over here. He's waiting.
Wait, Ted's wanting. Was Ted filming me tonight?
No.
I wish
Ted's not filming anybody tonight.
What?
I would love to film you.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But, yep, I got to go to a bachelor party.
And Ted told me yesterday, he's like, I got to head out tomorrow going to a stag party. So, yeah.
He's going to be gone.
He should be fun, but
yeah, you should be embarrassed. Yeah.
You get your butt home and be in bed by 10 o'clock.
Okay.
We don't want to hear from Zip.
Aaron's waiting up for you. You know.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have this thing on all night.
Aaron will be asleep by 10 o'clock.
And don't even bother calling me if you get arrested. Don't even bother. You'll just sit in there all night.
Yeah.
I'll come get you, Ted.
Yeah. Anyway, so Ted's going to be without us this weekend for this wonderful cold front that's
coming. He's literally leaving for 12 hours.
It's probably not even 12
okay.
hours.
Okay. All right. Maybe he will be back.
I'm going to be gone. I'm going to be gone probably the rest of the month. Yep.
Sorry, I'm just giving you a hard time. However, we should talk about some current weather situations and whatnot. We've got tonight's cold front supposed to come in some point here in the next 24 hours. Supposed to be cold tomorrow.
50s for high.
Mid-50s supposed to be super windy tomorrow.
Today it's windy too. It's supposed to be 18-20.
First windy day in a while. It's been all these dumb calm evenings, which I don't really care for personally.
Mm-mm.
I mean, they can be hit or miss. I think. I mean, Greg and Ted had a huge buck come in and on a calm night, but it just seems like the deer kind of moving real slow usually. But I mean, in that situation, the deer wasn't moving slow either. It's just
right.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, just changes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just depends on your situation. But what do you do when it's super high winds? Because tomorrow it's looking like 25 mile an hour winds at different times of the day. Like, do you tend to hunt low, or do you change your strategy at all? You know, you hear some guys say that you've got to, when the winds get up that high, that you've got to go low because the deer will move down lower
valleys and stuff.
Valleys
winds are less.
Yeah. Have you seen anything like that?
I always think the same thing. Like, let's get out of the wind. Because you do see them, you know, when it's high winds, whether you're in the timber, whether you're in a food plot or in egg fields or something, they are, like, their head's on a swivel. They're not out there relaxing, having dinner, right?
Right.
It's the same way in the timber. You know, they're snapping their head up every couple minutes. And, you know, but at the same time, you know, that wind is nice. If you're in a situation where you get to make a shot, because you can just about do anything up in a tree.
They don't know a thing.
Right, yeah, because the trees swaying and the leaves and branches and crap's flying all over the woods in those days.
Yeah, we were talking about, you know, getting hit last night when we were setting up, me and Ted were, and we don't go near as high in the tree when it's windy, usually. Number one, for safety. But also, just because, like you said, you can get away with so much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can walk up on deer. You can be way more aggressive in your scouting before you go in and hunt. That's the one thing with being mobile that we don't like about those still calm days, especially when it's dry and crunchy, is you're trying to get in sight to bedding as you can, but it gets very, very tough.
I was thinking last night, I was walking in to scout that or do that observation, and when I got kind of I was walking down the access path, and all of a sudden these does started blowing at me. And it's like, when it's that calm, literally every deer for a couple hundred yards knows that there's a deer blowing over there. And I mean, even if you spook a deer and it crashes a bunch on a windy day like that,
they don't know.
No, I mean, you could be 30 yards from another deer that's bedded, and as long as they're not blowing or running right over them, they don't have a clue a lot of times.
What's your perfect wind? Like, obviously 20, 25 is probably too much. We don't like it there.
Yeah. I've seen a
10, 15-ish.
Personally, I think that your movement drops off once it gets up that high.
Right.
Like, if the wind lays in the evening, it'll pick up. But I like that 10, 15.
Do you think they want to get out in those open fields in those days? Like, because they can at least visually see their danger? You know what I'm saying?
Maybe.
I don't know. I
think
kind
there's certain days
like
where it seems like that's definitely the case. Or, I mean, whatever the reason is, but windy days they'll be out in the open fields. I think I've seen that before. I don't know exactly what the reason would be, but
I mean, when we put the stock on that buck a week and a half ago or whatever, it was pretty windy. It was 15 mile an hour, I would say.
When Brody and you stocked that buck last year.
Yeah, it pretty was windy.
Pretty windy.
It was windy enough that it, like, the willow tree that we had the stands in was cracking.
Yeah, and you did. And I mean, Brody got out of it. Brody ran up to the deer. I mean, you
right.
I mean, that's how windy it was.
But it was interesting because those deer, they had two exits out of that bedding, and the one exit was to come back on the downwind side of the bedding area, where they're somewhat protected by the from the wind. And the other exit was to walk straight out into that wind into a field and head out towards ag. And all the does and that buck that we saw came out on the downwind side that evening. Now, I don't know if that was what they always did,
right?
But it made sense for them to come back there because we were slightly out of the wind behind all those willows. It was good wind cover. And they came out that direction, and that's why Brody was able to stalk up there on him.
Speaking of Brody, he just shot a real nice buck in Nebraska, and Ted, maybe you can get on YouTube and post the link in the comments here. You guys should check that out.
Yeah, sweet. Public land, Nebraska, corn dog, got it done.
Smoked him. They jumped the buck like 3 or 4 days before he shot it out of the same bed, basically, and he had two nice bucks come back. His brother jumped him, and they just came right back into the bedding area.
Shoots him in, like, some horsetail grass.
Really?
Like snake grass or whatever.
I saw the picture of the deer. It was awesome.
Yeah. Late in the morning, came back. They were sparring out in front of him, and old corn dog was pretty fired up, it seemed like, in the video.
Oh, yeah. He was pretty fired up. You can check it out also. If you don't find the link, you can check it out on the YouTube channel. I believe it's Chance Vorderstrass, Whitetail Instinct. Just search that, and you'll find Brody's buck. Pretty sweet hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of sweet hunts, you and Kurt clean house on those moose up in Alaska, dude.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, we were both lucky enough to get a shoot a moose, and I'm not sure if you guys will use the video or not because we're not really good camera guys, but but there's some pretty cool stuff in there. And yeah, we had some issues when we flew out of Chicago with our guns. So the first 3 days in camp, we had no weapons other than one bow between Kurt and I. So yeah, I got lucky. And the first day we could hunt, I smoked a respectable bull with
nice
my bow.
Nice bull. Jeez,
so,
big
yeah,
bull.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You saw all kinds of them. Didn't you?
We hunted with the same transporter. It's all self-guided. They just drop us off. When we take off in the float plane that morning from Bethel, Alaska, we have no idea where we're going. So I actually used Onyx Maps, and I kind of had a general idea, so I downloaded a couple grids, and the place we ended up going was literally a mile off one of my grids. I could still even use it. It helped.
Yeah.
But so we get out there, and it's like, talk about figuring it out on the fly, right? We've got 9-10 days to like find out where these moose are, if there are any, and what's going on. So we flew in that first day. You can't hunt the day you fly, so we set up camp, and this place we went had more elevation. We could climb up behind camp. It was awesome, and you could see quite a distance. And I bet that first night we saw probably over 15 bulls. I mean, a lot of them were a mile away, and you're not going to shoot a bull a mile from camp. You just aren't. It's so much work that you don't do it. And but in that, the 5 years earlier when we hunted with the same transporter, we were in a much flatter, marshier. I mean, it's wet everywhere up there, but it was flat, and we couldn't get an elevation anywhere. And I think we saw six or seven bulls the full 10 days that we hunted. I mean, we including cows that night, we had to see close to 30 bulls. We had one bull swim across the lake in front of us. He sparred with a bull across the lake, and then there was a cow with a small bull on our side of the lake, and they quit fighting, and he swam across the lake right in front of us to go chase that other small bull away from the cow. It was awesome. It was insane. We, like, went back to camp that night. I mean, we were like, it was like Christmas Eve, right?
Like, yeah,
we couldn't
it's
wait
like we're
going
to
gonna
get
there.
Into him tomorrow.
Even though we didn't have a gun, it was right. But it was awesome. It was really fun.
Yeah.
That's got to be a good feeling showing up and just seeing tons of bulls. I mean, you know you're in the money, at least. You got a chance.
There was, Kurt, I shot my bull 0.4 miles from camp, and, we got it all packed out by the end of the next day back to the lake. And Kurt shot his 0.8 miles from camp. And so he and my brother Mike take off after this bull. I go, I'm not going to help you guys bring that bull back. I ended up helping him. But it was so far. 0.8 miles in Alaska with a 150-pound rear – one rear quarter is a – it's – stupid, right? So he ends up shooting this bull, And they come back and whatever. Oh, that's what happened. I stayed in the observation spot where I could see this bull bedded that they were going after. It was like I couldn't range it. It was too far, but mm-hmm. it was over a quarter mile away where they went down this draw and back up, and I could see him shoot it. I was filming it from a quarter mile away. And so after they left, like literally 10 minutes after they started walking after this bull, I see another bull come out of the brush like literally 300 yards from me. Like I could have shot him with a rifle, and it was way bigger than the bull they shot. And then and to add insult to injury, the following morning when we went to pack the rest of Kurt's bull out, I took off before those guys, and I'm up behind camp, like literally a tenth of a mile from camp, and I see something over there. I catch movement out of the corner of my eye, and this like tundra bog up on top of the hill, and I see this brack just coming over the crest of the hill. And I mean, I got some cool video of them, but it was the biggest bull we saw. Like,
oh, really?
Right behind camp.
Right next to
right
camp.
Behind camp. And now and we're on our way to almost a mile pack.
Right.
Out. You're like, oh, man. So it was awesome. It was good.
Yeah. We are going to show some footage of Scott's hunt up there in Alaska. We'll probably do it after the deer tour concludes here in a couple of months. But before we wrap up, it's getting close to lunchtime. We got to grab something to eat and then head to the woods. We want to answer some questions. What do we have in the feed, guys, so far?
Well, apparently Ted can't figure out this.
Yeah, I can't get that link to go.
Just type in Whitetail Instinct on YouTube, and you'll see old corn dog and hot dog's faces there.
Somebody asked if moose meat was good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Do you have?
It's like elk.
Do you have some that we could eat tonight?
No, you don't get that.
Come on.
The problem is, so here's the problem with it. It's so expensive to bring it back that we donate most of it.
Uh-huh.
But we brought back, we each brought back about 60 pounds of, basically 60 pounds is backstraps and tenderloins.
Sounds like there's enough for me there.
Yeah. We have some. We'll grill out at the house one of these nights.
If anybody's got any questions, go ahead and post them now. We'll get to a few of them here towards the end of the live feed.
Somebody wants to know, why didn't we quarter your buck, Jake?
It was real early in the morning, and the weather was cold enough, and we just took care of him the next day. We had enough guys there where we could, I mean, if the cart would have worked, we could have just rolled them out pretty easy.
Are there laws that prevent you from quartering? And what? Because, you know, it's funny, because when we were in the moose hunt, you're dealing with these, like, literally
yeah.
a rear quarter weighs as much as a doe that you shoot.
Yeah.
And it's like, Kurt's like, why don't more people quarter their deer? It'd be so easy.
Mm-hmm. In Minnesota, we did, and you definitely got to check what the regulations are state by state.
So what is it in Iowa? What do they allow you to do? Do you know?
There's no want and waste laws in Iowa. Isn't that correct, Greg?
Oh, there is.
Oh, there is?
Yeah.
With a deer? Okay. I thought,
read the regs and call your game warden.
Yeah,
read the
regs. We haven't done it in Iowa just because we haven't done that yet.
Right.
I mean,
okay. Yeah.
If we get one real deep, we're going to figure out what we need to do exactly. But in my situation, it was fine just to roll them out of there. It wasn't terribly far in there just because we had.
Right.
If we would have had to get them out through public, we probably would have figured out how to quarter them. But
in Missouri, you can quarter them. The law just states that you have to remove all edible meat off of the game that you harvest, whatever it is.
Wisconsin just changed the law recently, so you can now quarter deer. And they actually want you to, just with the way CWD is spreading.
Right, so that you don't spread CWD. And I don't remember what it is in Iowa. Like I said, we haven't quartered one here,
mm-hmm.
so we haven't looked into it.
Do the regs, like in Wisconsin or Iowa, do they define like what that meat is? Like in Alaska with the moose, they tell you have to take neck meat off, you have to take all rib meat off.
I wish they did.
But they don't.
No, they're just very basic. Like the one in Missouri just says you've got to remove all edible portions from the deer, and that's it. And then in like Minnesota, where we were at, it said, you know, you can quarter the deer in so many pieces, you know, no more than that number. So we stayed underneath of that number. But then it didn't define what quartering means.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, what do you...
Quartering is usually a fourth, like 25%.
You're right, but it said five pieces or less.
Yeah, I know.
If you decide to quarter your deer, it's like, well, five isn't a quarter.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, I don't... They need to be more specific with it, with a lot of the rules. But I totally understand where they're coming from.
Right. You don't
they
have
just
somebody,
have to
you
cover.
Don't have somebody packing the rack out in two recorders.
Right. They have to cover all bases, you know.
It's and just best to call the local,
yep,
whoever your game warden is, or someone local just to get, I mean, just so you know what they tell you the rules are, then it's
right.
Kind of.
Then you're in the clear. But definitely do it before you go to quarter and one and pack and one out. We've seen it can be very effective, though. What else you got, boys?
Ryan wants to know if we're doing any out-of-state gun hunts this fall.
I'll be in
Wisconsin.
Are we
doing any out-of-state gun hunts this fall?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Yep. For maybe sure. Missouri, but I don't know yet. Not positive. Definitely Wisconsin, IA. Do we have any? Maybe Alabama. We are debating on what we're going to do in Alabama. We may go down there and bow hunt for a week or so, and then gun hunt for a week.
When's that, January or something? When
yeah, it, yeah, early January.
Is that when their rut's still? Is that when they're fired up?
My sister's getting married January 5th, I think. So I'm going to have to maybe slither down to Alabama by myself because I'm not missing that.
Man, that's going to be wild.
You're not missing
what,
the hunt in Alabama or the wedding?
Well, I got to go to the wedding, but I might be driving down the morning after. I can't miss Alabama. That turkey hunting there was so fun.
Yeah, it's awesome country. Have you all tried tree saddle hunting? We are getting into it.
Ted was saddled up last night, and it sounds like I'm going to be tonight.
Yep. It's these platforms are sweet from what we've seen so far that they're making with the saddles now. I mean, they attach to the tree like that, and they are rock solid. They're just, you know, the size of a tree stand seat. But
I saw that Instagram clip. What were you standing on?
Just the platform.
So that you still had a full tree stand up there?
No, it's yeah. a saddle platform.
Oh, the platform comes with the saddle. That's
right.
Cool.
Yeah. And it's just about that tall, you know, that wide, but you can use a ratchet strap. It comes with like a cinch rope, and
once we get it nailed down, like, we're definitely going to be using them a lot more.
Especially in the rut when we're trying to bounce around.
So would you
a
use
lot.
It for both guys or just the camera guy?
We just used it for the camera guy last night, and I packed in my normal stand. But it's intriguing with these little platforms because, you know, if we got to thinking, if you want to be super mobile and, like, go to every extent to lighten your load and go in a long, long way, you can get one of those platforms, get a saddle, get a couple of climbing sticks, and put what's called aiders on the climbing sticks, where it's just ropes that hang off so that you can get up higher.
Okay.
You can take two climbing sticks, one of these platforms, put it on a backpack and go. And you're talking, I don't know how much that weighs, but probably half the weight of a tree stand and sticks.
And we're looking into the rope, what is that rope system called for your sticks too? What do you have?
That's what I was just referring to, aiders or whatever. Okay. I don't know what it's exactly called. That's what Garrett DIY Sportsman calls them,
aiders.
Is aiders.
That's what they're called then?
Climbing aid. Yeah, I would think, because he knows what he's talking about. But, yeah, you can just hang those ropes off of there and then climb up the ropes and onto your stick. You know, but two sticks and one of those little platforms, pretty sweet. Especially, and you can get it set up way faster. Like, way, way faster than you can tree
stand.
There's
only one cinch that you have to do. There's not two.
Right.
I mean, once you get that one around, it's pretty much locked in.
It took some getting used to last night when I was hanging everything in the tree, but I usually when I'm going in and hanging the stuff, it's easy to hang the one stand, and then the camera stand is a royal pain.
Mm.
Just because, I mean, these trees are not that big in a lot of cases, and you've got all that equipment up there. Usually one of the two of you is going to be on the wrong side of the tree where you're leaning away or the stand's not, you know, flat. With these platforms, they're so small.
Did you like it, Ted?
Yeah, it was comfortable.
Was it?
Yeah, it was really comfortable.
He could film a lot, too,
out
of the saddle.
You get a lot of range for
you
filming.
You still use the camera arm, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just work with it between the tree.
Right.
I mean, you pretty much got 360 then, you know.
Because you're leaning back way farther than you normally are. Otherwise, you're usually wrapping it around you, right?
Yep.
Cool.
I like these little platforms. I think it's going to be sweet in the rut when we're bouncing around, because that's always the gripe with me has been the amount of time it takes you to get set up, because you're losing time hunting at that point. You're screwing around in the tree.
Well, yeah, it's happened, right?
Yeah, I mean,
more than once.
Twice in one day last year, you know, where I had a buck come by when I was up there messing around trying to get everything set up, and I, you know, with this, I think we can just shoot up a tree a lot quicker and get up there. when we're filming, it obviously takes more time, but yeah. What else we got? Anything else we need to cover here, boys?
Which saddle y'all using?
We've got a variety of them right now. Tethered is sending us a bunch of stuff next week that looks really sweet. Our buddy Jim Reiser's been using it and loves it. We've got that Kestrel stuff now. I mean, there's several of them out. And we're, like I said, guys, we're just getting into this. So we're kind of trying everything at this point. But from what Jim has used them for a couple years, and he loves that Tethered stuff. Are you guys seeing mature bucks on scrapes up here? Yeah.
All those bucks that I had on camera were working the same scrape.
I don't have any cameras on scrapes at the moment, unfortunately.
Yeah, they were working the same scrape.
I don't know, 10 different bucks on that scrape.
Mm-hmm. Me and Ted found them.
Working it aggressively.
Oh, yeah.
The videos are pretty funny.
Yeah.
There's one that's just mad at him.
Right.
Like, he comes in and he's just ripping his antlers through the tree and just like.
Yeah. Definitely. Scrapes, we pay very close attention to those. What else?
Somebody asked.
Luke Nissen just killed a real big buck over a scrape. Sorry to interrupt you.
Is it time to start using a decoy? That's what somebody asked.
Yeah. You can use them anytime, really.
It's a perfect time, though, I think.
Now is great, yeah.
We should drag one out tonight.
Mm. We started using them when the season opened here in Iowa, pretty much. And, I mean, I know Greg's going to use them a lot with that recurve just to try to draw deer within real close, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
It's always in the back of his truck. I mean, if we find a setup that calls for it, it's going to be out there probably.
Mm-hmm. We're always trying to find mobile setups for decoys because that's the problem.
But with the decoy, we're also trying to avoid areas where there's going to be a bunch of deer coming in close just because
where
does will come out and kind of check it out a lot of times and maybe blow at it and raise heck. We're not necessarily trying to put it on a field or somewhere where a bunch of deer are going to be coming out and get curious about it. But
works good for observation sits. You know, where you're back off a ways, and the only way that you can kill the deer is if you call them in. And if you call with a decoy, it can work really, really well because they have that visual, you know, that they're less apt to getting downwind of you because they've seen the deer at that point, and they start coming straight to him.
Yeah, but set it up so they come downwind of the decoy.
Yeah, and get a
shot
at them.
They almost always do.
Yeah.
It's like you can almost line them up where you want them to go.
Yep, that's right.
Can you elaborate on Luke's buck a little bit?
Luke's buck was a buck that he said he had pictures of it since 2014, and it looked mature then.
Yeah, I mean, we filmed him try to kill that thing last year.
Yeah, the thing's just a bull, and he had it consistently come into a scrape for the last 2 years at least, the week before the season, just daylight pretty much every day, and then pretty much as soon as season opens, the thing either disappears or, like, will be very sporadic and come in at midnight, like, one or two times. And he just started hanging and hunting around the area that the buck was coming out. And then I think he had an encounter with it maybe a night or two before he shot it. And then he just set up on a big community scrape the night after, kind of close to where he saw him. And he blind called just because he knew he was close to where the buck was living, obviously, because he saw him the night before. And just all the pictures were he was betting close, obviously. And he said he came walking up the ridge all bristled up.
Right to the scrape.
With his ears pinned back because he thought there was another buck in there working a scrape.
Yep. Me and Zach, that's how we killed his buck in 15 also. We could hear a buck working scrapes and rubs and stuff about 100 yards from us on a still evening up in some pin oaks, and it was about 10 minutes of legal left, and we were set up right over a couple of very fresh scrapes.
That's an old buck there.
Oh, yeah, he's super old. But, yeah, we grunted loud, and he came just on a string right underneath us to those scrapes. It makes sense. I mean, they're used to other bucks being in that same general location. So it makes sense to call in that scenario. Well, obviously worked. That thing looks like a freaking mule.
Talk about scent blowing down a river.
Yeah, me and Ted were actually noticing more of that the other day when we were in the buck nest dropping milkweed. It seems like, and I don't have the thermals nailed down yet. Infault knows way more about it than we do, but it seems like if the river's flowing pretty good and you're set up close to it, that your scent will pull with that water. And I don't know if it's a thermal thing with that you know, air rising off the water or what, but yesterday, especially when it's calm in the morning, when we were dropping milkweed, it was going directly opposite of the forecasted wind, and it was following that river down. And when we went into the buck nest the first time to hunt, our forecasted wind would have been blowing straight at those deer. But they were up on top of the riverbank, and we were down in the river. And as we were going in, instead of our wind blowing out of that river and out to where those deer were bedded, it stayed in the river with us and just went straight down. I think of wind like water and how that it flows through things. You know, and if you're in a gap in some trees, or if you're in a ditch, for example, a lot of people say that you can't hunt down low in those ditches on windy days and stuff, and it is very challenging. But I've found that you can if you're hunting a wind that's coming straight up the ditch or straight up the river.
Yeah.
You know, because that wind will follow that like water.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially. And, I mean, I don't know if that makes sense or not, but.
I mean, thermals had a big play in Ted's buck he killed in Kentucky for
sure.
Oh, yeah. The wind was blowing all night. Pretty much, I mean, it was just sucking down this valley. It wasn't going where the forecasted wind direction was or whatever. The wind direction was supposed to be blowing right up where his buck was bedded. And then after the wind died down, our thermals just started dropping downhill, luckily, because the buck would have smelled us almost for sure if the wind was still blowing.
Right.
It's just, you got to try to play it and try to get a little bit lucky sometimes.
Yeah. Robert said, depends on the water temperature. And I'd say that makes sense. Ted also said, I believe it's just the elevation. I think it's, when you're dealing with a river or a stream, you have that sort of tunnel, especially if you have trees around it or something. It creates a tunnel where that water is. So when wind flows down into that area, it's going to follow that tunnel. It may not be following the water so much with the thermals as much as it is just going through the path of least resistance, so to speak.
Yeah, this time of year, it can be challenging when you're in the timber, too, just because all the foliage on the trees and stuff like that. It's hard to get a consistent wind direction sometimes just because wind's just bouncing off all the trees, it seems.
Right.
And that was kind of the situation that where I shot that buck. I mean, luckily we were close to the field edge, but as soon as we got in the woods, the wind started doing some funky stuff just because it's so dense.
What's your go-to deer call? We use the Woodhaven ProFlex Grunner. Sounds awesome. And you guys can save 10% there at woodhavencustomcalls.com if you use the promo code THP, what is the promo code? I got to remember what it is.
Yeah, just use it, guys. I mean,
hang on.
You figure it out.
No. We have a sweet promo code for them. And it is, wait for it.
Come on now.
Cue the Jeopardy music.
Everybody's leaving. Great job, Aaron. Everybody's
leaving. Sorry, guys.
Everybody's leaving just like that.
I should be on my game. I want to make sure. Yeah, that's what I thought. It's THP 2018. You can save 10% off of Woodhaven Custom Calls at woodhavencustomcalls.com with promo code THP 2018.
Boom.
Those are the deer calls we use. And they're pretty awesome. There was another question there also that I wanted to get to real quick. What's your scent control method as far as laundry and stuff in the house before you go?
Tide detergent. It smells beautiful.
Tide. We just dress like we wear this a lot out there. There's zero.
We're talking about that wind and those thermals. That's the scent control.
That's it.
That controls where your scent goes.
Yep. That's all we use. We gave that stuff up a few years ago, and it was amazing to not have to worry about it anymore. So now that's what we worry about is the wind. And maybe it costs us some deer sometimes. I'm not sure.
Guys, Ted smells bad, like real bad. He smells so bad.
When are we going to kill the big nine? Jack asked. I don't know.
Probably never.
Probably not. He's
elusive.
He's very elusive. But we're trying. There's just so many other good spots around, you know? It's like, God, I like that deer. He's real cool, whatever, but I've hunted that spot like a bunch in the last 7 or 8 years. And
Aaron was asking where we should go tonight, and that was one of the spots. I'm like, I'd rather not go there.
Yeah. I mean, just know it all so well. It's like we can't really learn anything more about that. Maybe we can shoot that thing, which would be pretty sweet, but maybe not, too. So, anyway.
Did you get any pictures of it this year?
I haven't got any pictures of it, but my friend Troy that's hunting the same deer, he's actually hunting him tonight. He's got several pictures of him, nice. And he's been sending them, and you know, we communicate back and forth.
He's alive and well.
He's alive and well, and he's doing this very similar stuff to what he was doing last year. Ted and I hunted the bedding area that, I mean, and after Troy sent me these pics, I'm thinking he's still in there. Like we thought when we were in there hunting the other night, we had high confidence that he was in that general area, and Troy's trail cameras are telling us that he was and possibly still is. We just didn't see him, you know, but Troy's going in and hunting him tonight. And that's a good, another good, that's a good tip, guys. If you meet up with other folks that hunt in the same public area, stay in contact with them. Because now that he's told me where he's going tonight, I'm not going to go in there and mess him up. Last week we were in there hunting. He got there and shot me a message. He's like, I see you guys are, you know, up in this area. I'm not going to go in there. I'm going to go cup around this way. It's like, man, it makes it so much easier.
Yeah, that's nice.
And when he shoots the thing, we're going to go and help him probably drag it out and film it because he's got a good chance of killing him, I think.
Yeah, I hope somebody does. That's what I told, because I ran into him that same night. I'm like, dude, just kill this thing. I want it. So, yeah. I want somebody to kill
it. I want to, because then I don't have to worry and think about it anymore. Like, I think we have a good chance of killing it too, but it's like, ah, every time you go in there, it's...
It's stressful sometimes when you're chasing one big deer, right?
Well, the thing is, there is a lot of other good bucks in there that you would also shoot. I mean, it's not like you're specifically only going to shoot him, like if another nice buck walks by, which potentially could in there for sure. I mean, you're going
to
shoot him.
Mindy said to wait until she gets back to shoot him.
Well, yeah.
So I guess that decides where we're going tonight. Cause, yep. I mean,
we're not going there then because she's not here.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to get him out if Mindy's not here probably.
Why don't you go with Ted?
To the stag party?
Yeah, go with Ted.
No. Ted's dad just commented on here and said if he gets out of here in time, you guys are going hunting tonight. So we better shut this down. Ted's got plans. We gotta get him out in the woods with his dad and get him to a stag party.
Ted, you be careful now.
Yeah.
I will.
No horsing around or anything.
Thanks for joining us, guys.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for joining us. We always got to shut these down when stuff starts getting weird, and it's getting weird.
All right, have a great day.
See ya. Good luck hunting.